Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, this experience was so great to be able to respond to some conversations that you've started with me, both introspective about my own business and what I can think differently and how I can approach the business differently, but also to now respond to some new shocks that none of us have ever seen. I mean, we're combining three different years, 1918, 1968, and 2008, all this year, but to talk through it with your listeners and to talk through it through your framework has been extremely helpful. So thank you for being my mentor, and thank you for helping me think through these issues along with your clients.
And the sun has moved on, so I'm quite happy. I have my regular glasses on now, so I can actually see.
Okay, good. So welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. So as you've been hearing, Barbara Winter is back, and she has taken her sunglasses off for this conversation. She's joining me today from Valencia, California, which is in Los Angeles County. Our conversation today is from her book. She's coined the phrase multiple profit centers, and we're going to talk about the plate spinning concept that has opened up my eyes for all these decades since I've known Barbara. She wrote a book, Making a Living Without a Job, in 1993, updated it in 2009. Not any of the concepts were updated, but just added some ideas, right, Barbara? And more stories.
Well, that first time around, there was no internet.
Yeah.
And there was no Skype. And so that was mainly what the updated version was, just acknowledging new technology that has become such an important part of every business.
Yeah, it sure has. So Barbara J. Winter is a pioneering self-employment advocate, writer, and teacher who has spent the last 30 years pondering the question, why aren't we all self-employed? Actually, after our first conversation, it's coming to me that we, 9 out of 10 in the 1900s, is that right, Barbara, were self-employed. Everybody we knew was around us were mostly self-employed.
Yep, and I bet we had grandparents who were.
Yeah, well, I've got many generations. Actually, there's a town called Meyer Grove in Minnesota that's named after my great-great-grandfather.
Cool.
Yeah. And he brought in a new breed of cows into the region, which are Holstein cows. And they're great milk producers for dairy farms.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I have many, many generations of people who are entrepreneurs in my family. So there is an ingrained mindset. Because that has changed, a lot of people going into entrepreneurship now, like you have mentioned, are getting, you know, they've been trained not in the entrepreneurial mindset, but more in the employee mindset. And so
Right. As
a result of that, we're having to help, you know, retrain people to get out of perfectionism and not risking taking financial risks, but actually figuring out how to take risks and manage the uncertainty in ways that will be liberating to your spirit.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, I want to mention before we get too far along, as I was introducing you and got segued into our first conversation about self-employment, that 9 out of 10 people were self-employed growing up. And that's how our schools, you know, ended up having the calendars that they did, because it was good for, you know, kids wouldn't be in school during the summer because they were on farms. Farming. And so, you know, some things in our society don't, you know, haven't changed. and they were built into our system, and everything now is just being, you know, upended. And so now we're needing to teach people about entrepreneurship in ways we never really anticipated that we would have to. But you, Barbara, have always been helping others discover the joyfully jobless life in your favorite occupation. To readers of Winning Ways newsletter, the longest running self-employment publication of its kind, Barbara is editor and publisher. Readers of Making a Living Without a Job, a book that's been in print since 1993 and updated in 2009, know her as the author. Participants in Barbara's seminar of the same name, along with others including Establish Yourself as an Expert and How to Support Your Wanderlust, know her as a passionate teacher. She also leads retreats to help small business owners bring creative thinking and fresh ideas into their work. She is convinced that small is still beautiful and loves working with one-on-one person enterprises, also known as solopreneurs or micro businesses. Barbara is also an intrepid world traveler and curious lifelong learner, which is a critical skill and mindset in the entrepreneurial lifestyle. When she isn't out exploring the world, she can be found blogging at joyfullyjobless.com. Connecting with other entrepreneurs or Facebook or reading a really good book. So welcome to the program, Barbara. And today's sponsor is Sally Doyle, who has sponsored many of our podcasts. Thank you, Sally. Sally just rebranded her company. She's really getting used to it now. Great Lakes Bookkeeping. Great Lakes Bookkeeping not only provides relief from the boring and tedious bookkeeping tasks, but also uses the information as a roadmap to advise owners of opportunities that can help their business. With over 20 years of experience and expertise, owners trust Sally to help them achieve their goals and dreams. So right now, you can reach her to get a profit analysis and cash flow projections at greatlakesbookkeeping.com or 1-651-208-8151. If you've been a regular listener, you've heard Matt Clark, a vice president and relationship manager for U.S. Bank's Twin Cities Emerging Business Group, say that small business owners are not doing their cash flow projections. So it's critically important, especially now, to have a number of different scenarios that you can look at to cash flow your business going forward. So call Sally, check her out at her, on her website, and get it done. Get your cash flow projections done. You got a lot of ideas you need to, you know, infuse with money behind it. Or so welcome, Barbara.
Thank well, you.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. All right.
Thank you.
Yes. So the last part of your book has to do with exploring options and kind of implementing the ideas that you're getting. And one way to shape the ideas is through a concept that has stuck with me since the 90s is multiple profit centers. So tell me how you came up with the concept and how it works.
I don't know exactly how that idea was born, except I realized from my own experience that there were a number of things I was interested in doing. And I went through the whole process of thinking, oh, I can only pick one. And then kind of drifting off from there and thinking, well, is there a way I could, you know, make room for a number of different activities? Some of them sort of evolved naturally. And I discovered as I started talking about this, not only is there a practical side, of course, because it adds to your income when you have several different things that are generating income for you. But I think for a lot of the kind of creative folks who end up being self-employed, it also is just interesting to be doing different things, not doing exactly the same thing day in and day out. And so the idea of creating more than one source of income really comes in different formats. For some people, there's just such a strong singular passion in that their business is built on that they have different profit centers, but they're all tied together to this thing. Other people have very diverse interests, so they have very different things going on. One of my favorite stories about that is a man I had heard about who moved from, I think, Los Angeles to Seattle and started a window washing business. And he decided he was going to offer his services to small businesses, not to homeowners. And he built a really good business, but that's not a really good business in the wintertime in Seattle. And so he started a second profit center, which I think is utterly brilliant, installing and taking down Christmas yard ornaments for people. And he even has rental space. So if you can't store all the stuff in your basement or garage, for a fee, he will carry it away, put it in storage, and bring it back next year. So he has these two actually kind of seasonal businesses, both of which involve a lot of physical activity for him, plus interacting with homeowners and business owners all day long. So some people have, as I said, very diverse profit centers that allow them to indulge in very different kinds of things they're interested in, and other people, they're more connected.
Yeah.
I think of mine, but most of my profit centers all have to do with self-employment. But the activity involved is not the same for everything. So you mentioned my newsletter, Winning Ways, which takes an enormous amount of time to produce. And so writing is one of my profit centers. But then there's also, besides writing my own newsletter, I've really gotten interested in doing more article writing. I'm working on two books right now. So there's, you know, kind of some other different things besides in just the whole writing process, too.
Yeah. What are your two books about?
One of them, which I am having so much fun with, is actually a collection of essays from Winning Ways newsletter from over the years.
Oh,
and
excellent.
It's called Still True. And they're just, you know, just things to inspire and inform entrepreneurial thinking. Then the other one is called, which actually came out of a workshop I have done a few times, is called Becoming an Idea Detective. And it's really about how do we become the Sherlock Holmes of our own business.
It's brilliant. Well, it fits in with your brainstorming sessions that you have with people and that
right.
We're offering to our listeners for 60 minutes for the introductory session. It's only $49. Well, that sounds so much like so much fun. And
it is fun.
Well, you don't do things that aren't fun and
no.
Connected with your passion. And it's the trick always is to marry, you know, the passion and the cash flow.
Right.
And figuring out how to do that. And the multiple profit center concept helps you have the flexibility to do that. Because one of the attachments in a PDF file that I'm going to have available to all you listeners is 8 Things That I Wish I'd Known Before I Started a Business by Barbara. The first one, we're not going to go through the whole list because you can go through and read it on your own. We wanted it to add as a bonus to our conversation. The first one is really the business that you start out with is not what you end up with. And that's why having multiple profit centers and lots of being an idea detective really makes a lot of sense. Because the marketplace, you know, there's so many things that happen when you innovate. And one of the biggest things is you've got a pilot program. Like Barbara, you mentioned that your book, your new book that you're writing, Becoming an Idea Detective, came out of one of your workshops. So having a place that you can, you know, launch or pilot your initial idea idea and then get feedback on it. Or I've been doing a We Meditate with Nancy. I started with 4 sessions for free to get an idea if there's a space and room for entrepreneurs to have a regular time in which they can meditate. You can get meditating, you know, applications and download and do it anytime. But I find you need a structure in place and the support of somebody that you know that can take you along the journey, which I think is particularly wonderful.
Right.
But every different profit center takes different amounts of time. And also, I'm noticing, like when you talk about it as plate spinning, you know, get one plate spinning up and running and keep it going and figure out the cash flow there before you put up another plate. Make sure that the other plate can keep going.
Yep. Yep.
And that you are thinking through how you're going to manage it. Like when I'm rolling out a new lab, I need to think about what's the email marketing campaign that I'm going to do and how can I, you know, turn this into bite-sized pieces so we can test the market a little bit to see the level of interest and then kind of shape it further to see, like, you know, in the leadership groups, you know, what's needed in the concept in order to make it work. That's meaningful for people. And people are trying out. That's what's great for about implementing new ideas right now. People are trying out a lot of different things because none of us have been isolated for this long, ever.
And I have encouraged people to take advantage of this time to lay the groundwork for things, because very often when we have an idea for something new we want to launch, it involves a fair amount of time to get it in place. And often that's what keeps us from getting our, you know, an idea that we know is a good one up and running, is that we just don't have the time to get the proper foundation laid. And that's one of the gifts of this time that we're in, I keep telling myself.
Yeah, I do too. Because it does take a lot of energy to kind of roll out new ideas.
Absolutely.
And the emotional range is really innovating. You know, you're not going to be excited the entire time.
Right.
You know, some of it is going to be tedious, or you're going to notice a glitch. And oh, like I've needed to reconfigure, you know, the pricing and the length of time and all the little details around it that possibly can go wrong. But those are the things that, you know, also, you know, once you, or like you had mentioned, you know, at the end of an offering, you analyzing, you know, did I enjoy this? Okay, let's say there is a market, people are jazzed about it, but God, it was so, you know, time consuming and I just didn't enjoy the process. I don't want to do it again. So giving yourself some freedom. And usually when you're going through this part of the process, it's not being paid for. So, you know, factoring in how you can cash flow during the time in which, that's what I love about the concept of multiple profit centers, is you get one going and part of the money for that can help fund the next idea that you have to launch it and see what happens. But that's part of the equation in developing a cash flow formula that we don't factor in.
Well, and another thing, too, is that we have to, you know, probably spend a year or two to see the cycles of our own particular business.
Yeah.
And we don't know what they're going to be going in. But every business has cycles, big ones, little ones. And, like, one of the things I discovered with my seminars was that in the summertime in Minnesota, nobody signed up for a seminar. They all wanted to be outside while they could.
Yeah, right, because it's so gorgeous here. Yeah.
In Dallas in the summertime, everybody was looking for good stuff to do indoors, so we'd sell out in Dallas. But it took me a couple of years before I saw that pattern, you know, and figured it out. Was like, ah, that's how we're going to set up next year's calendar. So, you know, paying attention to our cycles also can help us do a better job of managing and not freaking out when we go into a slow time,
right,
which I think a lot of people do, especially in their first, you know, year or so. And I mean, I remember thinking, oh, no, it's all over, and then going, oh, no, it's July.
This is normal.
It's not over. It's
this is the new
July.
Normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely, well, and what you're highlighting is an entrepreneurial characteristic, which in our last conversation, I talked about pattern recognition, gathering information from a lots
right.
of different places. You're talking about internal pattern recognition. Recognize what's going on in your industry that fits with what's going on within your business. If it's mm-hmm. happening in a lot of everybody in the same field that you're in, oh, okay, then that's normal.
Right.
But if everyone else is doing really well during a particular season and you're not, then that's a different question.
Right. Right.
What have you also noticed about multiple profit centers in, you know, a variety of different industries?
Well, one of the things that I, you know, you don't have to look very far to realize that even very conventional businesses actually do have multiple profit centers. They don't just, they may sell a single service, but then they might also have products that you could purchase from them. Or, you know, if you were running a business like a restaurant, there might be a couple of different ways that they actually sell what they produce, in-house dining, takeout, you know, bakery, that kind of thing. So really becoming aware of how common it is. We just haven't probably called it that. We just think, oh, that's what they do. But I think it's also important to realize that there's a power that we get from having multiple profit centers in realizing that if something comes to an end, we've got more ideas to, you know, that we can go to. I tell people they should keep an option jar. So as they have ideas that they don't have time to work on, they write them down and put them in this option jar. And when it's time when they need a new, fresh idea, they got a place where they can start the process.
Exactly. So,
but I think it's very empowering when we have multiple profit centers to realize that we can let go of things, and it's not the end of, it's not like getting fired from a job. It's like making space for something better.
Yeah, because that's, entrepreneurs are not failures. It's the businesses that they're, you know, or the products that fail. And so that's what you're reinforcing, you know, that some of the businesses have, you know, every idea has a shelf life.
Yes.
And the length of time varies. I like the idea that you mentioned of having an option, you know, a jar for ideas and options, because then if it's, because I was thinking initially, well, everybody's probably going to have a folder for it, but then I'm thinking, oh no, a physical jar, because then you see it and the natural tendency is you want to fill it up.
Exactly.
And so you're actually like engaging your imagination to come up with new ideas. So
mm-hmm.
you're looking for them. So it's
right.
it's a way to train yourself to look for other ideas, because the name of the game in resiliency has to do with not feeling like you're stuck anywhere, but you have options. And
exactly.
that's why also the multiple profit centers can give you more cash flow during difficult times, which means with cash, if cash flow is king, you want the king to be there, you know, the entire time, and kings like options so that you can, you know, flow from one thing to another.
You know, it was really interesting, Nancy. I hadn't done my Joyfully Jobless weekend seminars for a while. And I had have had such a wonderful experience with this. What I've done is simply put out the word that I would like to find collaborators. And every person who showed up in previous years to help set up seminars in their area had no experience doing it. And their job in the process was pretty much to find a good meeting space for us and pick me up at the airport when I got there. So I hadn't done that for a couple of years, decided I was going to do it again this year, had the most wonderful schedule set up from really one side of the U.S. to the other, and then COVID-19 arrived.
Oh, my gosh.
And ironically, the first weekend seminars were set up in Seattle, which is the only place that we were hearing about the virus. And so I thought that was, you know, we got to cancel Seattle, but I thought the other ones that were scheduled would happen. And then, of course, it didn't take very long where I realized that wasn't going to happen. And I realized also I was really sad about canceling them.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because I was going to lose a lot of income, which, of course, I was. But I just loved the experience so much. That's what made me really sad.
Yeah.
And at the same time, because I have other profit centers, I wasn't going into panic because I still had cash flow. And who knew how good it is for our bank accounts when we don't go out and go shopping.
Yeah.
I can't go shopping. So I am in the vulnerable category. So I have, you know, have people who shop on my behalf, and it's not at all. I have fantasies about when this is over, a leisurely trip through Target, which was like a weekly event normally, and it wasn't leisurely. It was like, okay, I got to go there and there, and I'm out. But now I imagine strolling through like I'm, you know, on the French Riviera or someplace.
Yeah, I have visions of that too. Everything is just like, okay, I got to mask up and get in and move as efficiently as possible and know exactly what I want to get and then get out quickly.
I know. It's really amusing to me how conscious I've become of ordinary things.
Yeah.
You know, things that we just have done in the past without giving much thought to it. And all of a sudden I have to think it through. What time I'll do it and where I'll, yeah. Anyway, back to where we were.
Well, it's good to know too how you have worked through COVID-19 process, because we've all, you know, shifted how we're working. And this allows you a lot more writing time, I imagine.
Let me tell you about that. I think I spent the first several weeks just staring into space. I mean, I was sad. I was really, really sad. And that was before I even knew how awful things were going to get.
Yeah.
And then one day I went into my office, world headquarters, of course, around the corner from where I am right now. And I found this book on my bookshelf that I don't know that I ever read before. It was not familiar. I think it might be something I just bought and it went on my bookshelf. And the name of the book is Damn, Why Didn't I Write That? And it's about writing nonfiction books. And so I took it off the shelf and I started reading it. I found it really inspiring. And I just liked the way the guy writes and his own storytelling. And here's a chapter, Do You Need an Agent? And he just covers everything. And so I started reading it, and all of a sudden, I was like, that's it. I am going to declare June, July, and August to be my writer's retreat. And I'm going to behave as if I'm at a writer's retreat without interruption.
Mm.
And that's how I've gotten big chunks of two books done. And I'm huge on giving projects a title. I find that once I give something a name, it just sort of helps me focus and attract the right ideas to it. So, it isn't necessarily something that you would announce to the world, but while you're working on things, to give it a name.
Yeah. Now, how do you work out the financial part around the projects?
What do you mean?
Like for your books, there's costs involved in that. And how do you use one profit center to fund the other? And because you've had Making a Living Without a Job, and you've probably been getting royalties all these years.
Right.
Does that help with funding the next project, or how do you think about the money part to make that work?
Well, I was clear about what profit centers I had that were, kind of on a continuing basis. And so that certainly makes a difference. If I hadn't had things in place, I'm not quite sure. And I think a lot of people, when they're just getting started and want to write something, find that difficult, because there is certainly a time lapse from the time you start writing until you are in a position to receive money for it. And then, of course, there's a couple of different options that you have, which is searching for a publisher until you find someone that wants to buy it, or publishing it yourself, where you have to come up with quite a bit of money to make that happen.
Yeah.
And all the marketing.
Yeah.
I actually was Making a Living Without a Job, and I know this sounds crazy, but it's actually true. I decided that I was going to have a publisher find me.
Ooh.
And I decided the way it was going to happen was, I was doing some seminars for the Learning Annex in New York, and I thought some editor is going to see me in the catalog, and they're going to come, and they're going to rush up when my class is over and offer me a contract. So I went to New York, and that didn't happen. 6 months later, I went back to New York. And I had the biggest seminar I had ever had there, 125 people, 125 enthusiastic people, 3 editors from 3 different publishing companies were in the audience. I only knew about one of them at the time. On Monday, all 3 of them made offers. And I was like, oh my gosh, now what do I do? That wasn't my vision. And I was going to have to choose a publisher, but I picked the right one. So,
well, and that's the whole thing about how the universe works, to the law of attraction, to really get crystal clear on what you want and letting go of the timing and how it's going to come out.
Yep.
But doing the work to make it happen.
Right.
Yeah. Like, had you not had that workshop, it would have been hard to figure out, how you would get the contracts.
Right.
But the idea initially came to you through New York, and then how you envisioned it happening, it came about in such a better, more wonderful way.
Exactly. And, it was, as I said, the biggest workshop I'd ever done there. And it was just so absolutely perfect. So
wonderful.
Yes, it was quite wonderful. And of course there were times where I thought in between, from the time I had the idea and then went to New York and nothing happened, that was kind of crazy to think that a publisher would find me, but that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So you never know, but if you don't envision something for yourself and have ideas, that you can put forth. You're never going to find out for sure. So making sure that you are exploring lots of different ideas. Is there anything else before we close out this conversation that you would like to reinforce about multiple profit centers?
Well, let's see. Not really, except that I just want to remind people, if they have diverse interests, that keep in mind that they can create a business that makes room for all of them. And I love what Barbara Sher says so much when people say, I have too many interests. And she would say, which of your children are you going to feed? You know, if you're interested in several things, you have to make room for them in your life. And I think that's such a wonderful, wonderful attitude. And I can remember there have been times when I've been doing a lot of cerebral work, like a lot of time writing, thinking, oh, I should start a business painting houses. I want some. I want to just throw my body into something. And so, you know, keep that in mind, what you need to become your best self and nourish your best self, and think about how you can create profit centers that help support that.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara, for sharing the wisdom behind multiple profit centers. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And if you'd like a brainstorm session with Barbara, it's 60 minutes. The introductory offer is just $49. You just need to say you're a listener of We Mentor and you'll get on the priority list. Because right now, you know, it's good to be having solid conversations as you carve out your next part of this journey through COVID-19 pandemic. All right. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Mon Frere, brother from another mother. We'll see y'all next week. All right. Thanks. Bye. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our We Mentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through wementor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, Nancy at wementor.com, or call me 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening and we'll see you next week.